SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Yama, and welcome to NITV Radio. Bertrand Tungandami ngaya. I am Bertrand Tungandami. Coming up in your program this Wednesday, the 11th of September, we explore the federal government's draft advice on their recently released National Suicide Prevention Strategy. Also in the program, we have a yarn with Gmalan Hunter Xeni, one of five First Nations scholars who were awarded scholarships by Aurora Education Foundation to study at three of the world's most prestigious universities, including Oxford in the United Kingdom. We'll also be joined by Shana Jones, the Director of Aboriginal Programs at the New South Wales Department of Climate Change, Energy, the Environment and Water, to talk to us about the New South Wales Aboriginal Water Strategy. All these stories and more coming to NITV Radio after the latest news.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
The Northern Territory Chief Minister Leah Finocchiaro announces her full ministry and scraps the treaty portfolio. Protesters clash with police in what could be Melbourne's largest protest in decades. And the second US presidential debate begins. Northern Territory Chief Minister Leah Finocchiaro has announced the full ministry of her newly elected Country Liberal Party government, promising a crackdown on crime. The portfolio for treaty has been scrapped, with Aboriginal Affairs taken on by a member for Buckley and Tennant Creek resident Steve Edgington. Newcomer Robin Kyle has taken the portfolios for child protection and prevention of domestic violence. The Chief Minister is also the Minister for Police and says her government is on track to deliver bail reforms and increased police powers in the first week of Parliament, despite growing concerns of a shift back to failed punitive policies.
I've made it very clear on day one of my government when I met with the Chief Executive of Department of Chief Minister and Cabinet and the Police Commissioner. Nothing will distract us from delivering a territory where we do reduce crime, rebuild our economy and restore our lifestyle.
The new local government will include six new departments and will move youth detention to the Department of Corrections, which undermines the findings of a 2016 Royal Commission into the protection and detention of children. Federal Shadow Minister for Indigenous Australians, Jacinta Price, has renewed calls for an investigation into Aboriginal land councils. Senator Price was flanked by Arante traditional owners who flew from Bantwe, Alice Springs, to Canberra to support her calls for an inquiry. She introduced a motion in the state Senate claiming land councils lack accountability and transparency.
There are so many issues, so many concerns that require an inquiry to look further into them so we can make this system better, that we can reform these systems to serve their purpose more appropriately, more directly, and bring about opportunity for all traditional owners.
The Central Land Council's chairman, Matthew Palmer, was with the group but didn't make any comment. The peak body for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Legal Services, NATSOLS, says it is bracing for a dramatic increase in child incarceration across the country. It comes after multiple governments have abandoned their commitments to raising the minimum age of criminal responsibility. The newly elected Northern Territory government has vowed to lower the age of criminal responsibility from 12 back to 10 and reintroduce speed hoods in detention centres and watch houses. The Victorian government has also abandoned its pledge to raise the age of criminal responsibility to 14. NATSOL's chair, Carly Warner, says governments are abandoning a key responsibility.
We all want to live in an environment where there is no crime, and this should be the state and territory government's responsibility to make sure that they are making investments, developing policies that are going to actually reduce crime and support our families. But what they're doing at the moment is law and order posturing about punishment that is only going to make crime worse.
And there has been clashes between police and protesters as tens of thousands of activists gathered in Melbourne to a halt in what could be the largest protest in the city in 14 years. The demonstrations are over a large military exposition being held this week in Victoria's capital. For the first time, special powers have been granted to the nearly 1,800 police officers who have been deployed to the area. Capsicum spray has been used as officers attempted to clear a large group of protesters outside Weapons Expo in Melbourne. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has told Channel 7 there should be no room for violence in the demonstrations.
Look, people have a right to protest peacefully, but you don't say you're opposed to defence equipment by throwing things at police. They've got a job to do, and our police officers should be respected at all times.
The federal government has decided to close a loophole in AUKUS-related legislation to clarify Australia's position of not accepting high-level nuclear waste from the United States, the United Kingdom, or other countries. The Labor Party plans to move amendments to its proposed legislation, the Australian Naval Nuclear Power Safety Bill 2023. The aim is to regulate nuclear safety with regard to the management, storage or disposal of radioactive waste from AUKUS submarine, which has been broadly defined as Australian, British or US submarines. The bill covers how the nuclear-powered submarine program will be regulated and includes the creation of a new statutory body, the Australian Naval Nuclear Safety Regulator. This comes after concerns from the Greens and other critics that this could pave the way for Australia to store waste from other countries. And the second U.S. presidential debate between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump has started with tempers flaring. This is the first debate with Vice President Kamala Harris, in which Vice President Kamala Harris has participated in since President Joe Biden dropped out of the presidential race. The candidates traded barbs over the economy, with Harris saying former President Donald Trump sold the U.S. to China. Both candidates addressed each other with personal attacks, a territory their aides had hoped to avoid. Ms. Harris accuses Trump of not having a proper plan for the U.S. economy.
Donald Trump has no plan for you. And when you look at his economic plan, it's all about tax breaks for the richest people. I am offering what I describe as an opportunity economy, and the best economists in our country, if not the world, have reviewed our relative plans for the future of America.
Trump responded, saying the same about Kamala's economy plan.
She doesn't have a plan. She copied Biden's plan. And it's like four sentences, like run, spot, run. Four sentences that are just, oh, we'll try and lower taxes. She doesn't have a plan. Take a look at her plan.
A former military chaplain says the Australian Defence Force won't need to wait for the government to start improving its treatment of women. The Royal Commission into Defence and Veteran Suicide found the suicide rate among ex-serving women is 110% higher than other Australian women compared to 42% for men. Almost 800 sexual assaults have been reported to the IDF in the last 5 years, with a workplace behavior survey finding 1 in 8 women experienced sexual misconduct in the previous 12 months. Reverend Dr. Nikki Coleman, a former chaplain and military ethicist with the Australian Defence Force, says there should be a zero-tolerance approach to serious misconduct.
Before the government gives a response, there are a couple of things that the senior leaders could do. When decisions come across their table about whether to retain someone who's been found guilty of serious sexual misconduct, they shouldn't have an exception and keep them serving. They should actually have a zero tolerance and have them leave.
Experts say Australia needs to step up its diplomatic efforts to succeed in its bid to co-host the 2026 UN climate talks with the Pacific. According to the authors of a new report of the joint Australia-Pacific bid, for the country to succeed, Turkey needs to be convinced to drop out of the race. A report co-authored by the Climate Council and the Smart Energy Council claims that holding the negotiations could mean an economic boon for the host city. Richie Marzian from the Climate Council says a higher effort is needed.
So we'd love to see the Foreign Minister, the PM, get on the phones, get on the blower and make sure that Australia is all lined up and ready to go, because the more time we have to prepare and use in the next 2 years, the better this opportunity can be, both economically and diplomatically.
And to sport, the Australian Paralympic team has been welcomed home at Sydney Airport after finishing ninth on the medal tally at the Paris Games. Australia won 63 medals in total, with 18 gold, 17 silver and 28 bronze. Family members of the athletes and members of the public began to arrive at the airport early this morning to greet their loved ones ahead of the official welcoming home ceremony. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, who was also at the airport, says he's proud of the Australian athletes.
These athletes, many of them have come overcome different forms of adversity. They haven't done that by themselves. They've done that with the support of their families, their peers, their coaches, and today's a celebration of that achievement.
And now, having a look at the weather around the country: Broome, mostly sunny 31, Perth, sunny 25, Adelaide, possible shower 18, Melbourne, showers 20, Hobart, similar conditions 15, Albury-Wodonga, mostly cloudy 19, Canberra, late shower 2, 20, Wollongong, mostly sunny 24, Sydney, same forecast and 25 degrees, Newcastle, sunny 27, Brisbane, a shower 2, 25, mostly sunny in Townsville with a top of 29, a shower to in Cairns with a top of 29 as well, and in Alice Springs a sunny day and 31 degrees, Darwin sunny 35, and for the Torres Strait Islands a mostly sunny day ahead and a top of 28 degrees. And that is NITV Radio News.
TV Radio, on radio, online and mobile.
Make sure you get the full picture, not just what the social media feed gives you. Find all our news and stories at SBS Language website. Bookmark sbs.com.au/language in your web browser today. And that was Let's Go. It's a song by Australian rock band King Stingray. Said that this song was inspired by their real-life road trips and the band's the footage from, there was a video release also about this song. It's footage of the band playing in their jam space and at festivals. I'm Bertrand Dungandami, and you're listening to NITV Radio, coming to you from Nam on the Kulin Nation this Wednesday afternoon. Still to come in your program, we have Ayan with Agmalan Hunter Akzeni, one of 5 First Nations scholars who were awarded scholarships to study at some of the world's most prestigious universities, including Oxford in the United Kingdom. As you'll hear in her conversation with NITV Radio's Shaka Pekova, Malan talks about her studies, her motivation, as well as her need, her call to have more female and First Nations female representatives in science, technology, engineering and mathematics. Also on ITV Radio today, Shani Jones, the director of Aboriginal Programs at the New South Wales Department of Climate Change, Energy, the Environment and Water. She'll join us to talk about the strategy, New South Wales Aboriginal Water Strategy. But first, let's talk about suicide prevention on the sidelines of the recently released National Suicide Prevention Strategy. A new six-paper series shows there needs to be a change in the approach of suicide prevention, calling for social factors to be given the same importance as mental health issues. It comes as the federal government releases its draft advice for the latest national suicide prevention policy. Alex Anifantis reports.
The number of people being affected by suicide, both in Australia and around the world, has been growing at an alarming rate. Based on data from the World Health Organization, in 2019, more than 700,000 people worldwide committed suicide. And that's just based on documented data, with fears that the real numbers could be much higher. At home, figures show that one in two people have been impacted by suicide in some form by the time they turn 25. Graham McLean is the chairman of Suicide Prevention Australia. He says combating the issue starts with better understanding of it.
Regrettably, suicide prevention is not a fringe issue. It is not simply a subset of the growing mental health crisis that we are all aware of. It is a significant issue in its own right, and many contributory factors contribute to that, and we need to understand that much better.
A new six-paper series published in the Lancet Public Health Journal is calling for a change on suicide prevention. The series, put together by a number of medical experts from Australia and overseas, points out that suicide should no longer be treated as simply a mental health issue. Professor Jane Perkis is the director of the Centre for Mental Health and Community Wellbeing at the University of Melbourne and one of the authors of the report. She points out the external influences that could push a person towards having suicidal thoughts or tendencies.
When someone reaches the point of suicidal crisis, they really need great clinical services wrapped around them. But we're arguing that it's bigger than that. And in particular, we're arguing that there are overlaying all these individual risk factors are social determinants that interact with them. So these are things like macroeconomic policies, public policies, social policies, legislative and regulatory frameworks, the healthcare system, the local environment, cultural and societal values, social cohesion and social capital, all these really big societal things, and also commercial determinants of suicide that interact with those individual risk factors to potentially lead to suicidal thoughts and behaviours and then to suicide.
The six-part report stresses that governments need to take these external factors into consideration when reviewing their suicide prevention policies. Professor Perkis says a key recommendation is having suicide prevention policies on all levels of government rather than just being overseen by the health ministry.
We've talked about in the series a suicide prevention in all policies approach, which would see national strategies signed off by prime ministers or specially appointed cross-sectoral ministers who are responsible for suicide prevention or prevention more broadly. And also we're seeking involvement of policymakers from sectors outside health. So that might be sectors like employment, housing, financial, welfare support, sectors that are responsible for welfare support, all those sorts of sectors.
It comes as the federal government announces the release of its draft advice for the National Suicide Prevention Policy. The strategy outlines a holistic approach to suicide prevention, ensuring all Australians have access to the support that they need. The policy is being worked on by the National Suicide Prevention Office in close partnership with other professional health experts. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says death by suicide leaves a permanent mark not only on those who choose to take their lives, but also on those around them.
Every death by suicide is its own universe of devastation. It is tragic for those who are gone, who
did not see any other way out. But it's also a tragedy for those left behind, the family and friends and associates of those who the shape of their world has been changed forever.
The vast majority of people who take their own lives are men. Figures both domestically and across the world show that men are three times more likely to die by suicide compared to women. In Australia, almost 2,500 men took their own lives in 2022. Mr. Albanese says the government is taking a number of suicide prevention measures targeted towards men.
Through the National Suicide Prevention Leadership and Support Program, the government is also funding a range of activities aimed at reducing suicide deaths and suicidal behaviour across Australia. This includes supporting mental, emotional and social well-being in men through the Men's Tables and Mates in Construction Building Suicide Prevention Skills.
An increasing number of people taking their own lives has also been seen across Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, with organisations such as Gayardui working to reduce those figures. With suicide and attempted suicide rates hitting such high figures all across Australia, frontline workers say they are being overwhelmed. Federal opposition leader Peter Dutton says the coalition will support the government's changes to the suicide prevention policy. But he says it's difficult to remain optimistic with more people taking their own lives each year.
We all want to be positive about what the future holds, but there is a lot of despair and a lot of reason for the angst that we hear, particularly from those service providers, you know, own electorates and from people who are trying to access services as young people. Let's be honest about that today as well. And I thank the Prime Minister for his words and for the actions the government's undertaking, and we're keen to support all of those programs in whatever form they take.
If this story raises issues for you, phone Lifeline Australia on 13 11 14 or text 0477 13 11 14. The service is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Alex Anifantis, SBS News.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
We must now take a break.
Your community, your conversation. NITV Radio.
As I was just saying a moment ago, we must take a break. But stay with us, because when we come back, First Nations scholar who is about to fly overseas to study in a prestigious university will share her motivations and also make calls for more female and First Nations female especially to join studies in STEM, which is science, technology, engineering and mathematics. For this story and more, stay tuned. And that was For My Titas, a beautiful song by Barca. Coming up next in your program, we have a conversation with a deadly First Nations sister who is headed to study a Masters of Public Policy in a prestigious university overseas.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Milan, thank you so much for joining us on NITV Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Can you please tell us first more about your people, who they are and where you come from?
Yep. So both my parents are Indigenous. My mum is Indigenous to Australia and my dad is Indigenous to New Caledonia. So on my mum's side, my grandfather, her father is Tiwi and Awadja from Top End of the Northern Territory. And my mum's mum, my grandmother, is from the Cadige and Walpuri peoples in Central Australia. And then my dad, who's Indigenous to New Caledonia, is from the island of Leifu, and he's a Jehu man.
Thank you very much. Now, you have a Bachelor of Science with honours from Australian National University, and you're interested in positively influencing policy and programs relating to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, particularly in relation to water and land rights. Can you please tell us more about your specialisation?
Yeah, so that's correct. I studied at the Australian National University in Canberra on Ngunnawal Ngambri country. and I graduated with a Bachelor of Science with First Class Honours specialising in environment. And the Collaborative Honours Project was working with traditional owners in the top end of the Northern Territory. But my research question was, what are the opportunities for Indigenous peoples in the Northern Territory to lead and manage land and water research on country? And so I'm really looking forward to studying at the University of Oxford, continuing on after my undergraduate studies to focus on more environmental policy and how Indigenous peoples can contribute to Australia's net zero target and ensuring that Indigenous livelihoods on country and their aspirations are included in any programs or policies that are developed.
That sounds very profound. Where did you get the inspiration? How did you find your area of study?
So as a child, I grew up in remote locations, first in New Caledonia with my dad in Kanak villages. And then when we returned to Australia out on country in Arnhem Land, near my grandfather's outstation at Coburg Peninsula. So my childhood really developed my love for creation and seeing, you know, the important work that people do on their traditional estates and wanting to make sure that if people choose to stay on their traditional estates, that they can, you know, support themselves by working and living on country, because not everyone wants to move into the big cities and, you know, have a 9-to-5 job and have a big debt to buy a house. So that's why I really wanted to make sure that anything that I do can contribute to Indigenous aspirations for people on their traditional estates, whether that's, you know, in the cities, because that's also Aboriginal country, or out in the regional and remote places.
Mm. And you're going to continue by studying this at Oxford, if I understand correctly. Can you tell us more about the program? What's waiting for you there?
Yeah, so I chose to study the Master of Public Policy at the Blavatnik School of Government at the University of Oxford. My main reason was because of Australia's history and linked with the United Kingdom. I thought it would be the best place to understand how that process operates on that side, and then to come back and return to Australia and be able to better inform programs and policy design to ensure that it's Indigenous-led and directed. Also, the program, I believe, by studying at the University of Oxford, has a more international focus. So this year our cohort alone has over 50 countries represented, and I don't think that you could get that kind of international perspective at any other location. So that was also an attraction for me studying there. And the fact that even though it's a public policy program and I'll be able to focus on environmental policy because that's my interest, it'll be really nice to be in a cohort of so many other professionals. So there's like journalists, not only scientists, also engineers, educational professionals, people that are interested in IT and cybersecurity space. So I think it'll be really good to have that kind of breadth of knowledge to learn from, but also sharing my unique experiences being an Indigenous Australian and a Kanak woman from New Caledonia. Regarding the climate change space, I think a lot of movement has been progressed further in the Northern Hemisphere countries, so it's also a good spot to place myself to really learn quickly about what kind of things they've been doing in the climate change space and how maybe we can either learn from that or build upon that back in Australia, ensuring that Indigenous knowledges are included in that.
That sounds very interesting. What do you think the main challenges will be for you going to Oxford?
Oh, good question. I think just ensuring that I prepare myself, because I know that, you know, it is quite intensive, the program that I've chosen to do. The master's is a taught program, and in a lot of other universities they do it over 2 years, whereas Oxford has decided that we do it in 1 year. So it's going to be really intense, but I'm looking forward to also the professional development component that the master's program offers, and just really ensuring that I can learn as much as I can and develop my skills to better place myself when I return in Australia to I guess champion Indigenous interests, whether that be specific to the Northern Territory or Australia as a whole, and how that can contribute to Australia and give back to all Australians.
Hmm. You were also awarded both the Scholar of the Year and Caring for Country at the 2024 NIDOC Darwin Awards. Can you tell us more about this award?
Yeah, I was really surprised, but one of the Larrakia staff members at Parramatta Water Corporation in Darwin nominated me secretly behind the scenes to be considered for the Caring for Country category and the Scholar of the Year category. And I think it was the first time they said that an Indigenous person in Darwin has been awarded two awards the same evening. So, yeah, it was a beautiful surprise. My family and community were really proud. They announced as part of the introduction for the awards that I had been accepted into postgraduate studies at the University of Oxford. And, yeah, lots of Indigenous mob in Darwin who were present at the NAIDOC Awards were just yelling and screaming and saying to me afterwards how proud they were to hear that news. And even like 3-4 weeks on since the awards, my family keeps getting stopped at shops with Indigenous aunties and uncles saying, oh, we heard about the awards and Malin's going over to the University of Oxford. We're so proud and it means so much to us and going to come back and help out so much for, you know, fighting for us to get things done better for us. So, yeah, I never expected that that would be the outcome of just me applying to get into Oxford.
Well, Malin, I'm sure this is not the last time we hear about you. Now, these are all the questions I wanted to ask, but is there anything you would like to add?
I don't know if you wanted to, like, mention anything about there aren't many Indigenous, especially women, in the STEM space. So, like, there's a lack of women in science, technology, engineering and mathematics space, but even, like, less Indigenous women in that space. And then when you go to, like, managerial positions, it's usually more men or Indigenous men in those positions, which is great. I think, yeah, there is a definite shortfall for Indigenous women in managerial positions in the STEM field. And that's why, yeah, it's really good to see more Indigenous women not only enter STEM fields, but also then if they so desire to reach out to have leadership positions, because then that gives a role model for other Indigenous women to not be afraid to get involved in STEM fields and also to be a role model for others to come up under them and to mentor them to, you know, positions higher up.
Did you have a role model?
I was actually mentored a lot by Zimbabwean Shona woman from Zimbabwe, the social scientist. And I feel that's really why, yeah, I could see myself, because she was a woman of colour who was so confident, you know, it really helped me to see that we can be in these places. And if you do feel uncomfortable, just really try to push through that if you're really wanting to stay in those STEM fields, because it's really important to have more women of colour and just women in general in the STEM professions, because that diversity is really needed and the different insights that we can offer because of our lived experiences.
Yeah, for sure. And what are the challenges that I would say maybe Indigenous or women of colour face in this area, in the STEM area?
I guess because it's such a male-dominated space, so maybe it can feel or look a bit off-putting if you're going to meetings with, you know, other scientists and engineers and it's like 90% male in the room and you're, you know, one or two females in the room. It's getting better, but I think, yeah, it'll only get better if we have more women coming into these spaces and then other women and, you know, men championing those spaces to make it more comfortable for women of colour and women in STEM to feel comfortable and to stay in those fields.
Our interview actually is at the same time as the National Science Week. What would be your message to girls who are listening to us and maybe are interested in STEM but don't know or don't have the courage? What would you advise to them?
Definitely give it a shot and, yeah, make friends with other girls that are in STEM fields, but also, yeah, make friends and close relationships with guys in STEM fields, then yeah, just get a support network going. Yeah, and if you are a nerd or in the nerds group at school, that's totally cool. And to really push, you know, that a lot of the nerds out there have, you know, ended up like developing Apple and Microsoft. And don't be ashamed if you're really good at math and if you're really good at science, be proud of that and just make that, yeah, your own.
Thank you.
And
so
you'll eventually find your peoples, whether that's, you know, not at school, but you go into university or vet courses, or if you get into the workplace, you will eventually find your people. But just, yeah, the importance of making those networks and forming those strong relationships with others that also help you when times get tough, that you have people you can reach out to and trust.
Will you have such a support group in England or at Oxford, or will you have to find your own group there?
I know through Aurora Education Foundation, we've already got a really good network of the support people with other scholars that are currently at the likes of Oxford and Cambridge, or have been previously studying there. So, yeah, we have a good support network already through the Aurora Education Foundation. And then also being an alumni at the Australian National University, there's quite a few ANU alumni that are either there currently or going to start the same year as me. So there's also another Indigenous ANU alumnus, Lily Island, who's the sixth Indigenous Rhodes Scholar that's travelling over to start her master's program this year. So I'm looking forward to, having quite a few of us Indigenous graduates at the University of Oxford to support each other.
Yeah, for sure. And when are you leaving? When is the course starting?
The course start date is 30 September and it will go until next year. And then graduating November 2025.
So that's pretty soon. Man, safe journey and good luck with your studies.
Thank you.
Visit sbs.com.au/NITV Radio.
Now, if you missed the beginning of this story, this conversation with Malan Hantaxeni, who is about to head to Oxford for studies at one of the most prestigious universities in the world, well, this story is already published on our website, sbs.com.au/NITV Radio. We must now step aside for a break. And when we come back, Shani Johns will be in conversation with Shalka Pekova, talking about the New South Wales Aboriginal Water Strategy. And as you'll hear, this strategy aims to strengthen and empower Aboriginal voices on water management in New South Wales.
NITV Radio, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 1 p.m. or anytime online.
Hello, and thank you for joining us, Shani.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Shani, can you please tell us a bit more about yourself, who your people are, and what is your role in the New South Wales government?
Oh, thank you. Yes, I'm Shani Jones. I'm a Cubby Cubby Waka Waka woman, so from southeast Queensland, where my grandmother and great-grandmother were taken to Sherbourg Mission. However, I was born on Kaurna country, which is in Adelaide, and I've had the wonderful opportunity to grow up in Darawal country, Wadi Wadi nation here on the south coast, but proudly called Bidjigal and Gadigal country my home in Sydney. And thank you. As the director of the Aboriginal Water Program, I'm really excited to be able to continue to co-design the first New South Wales Aboriginal Water Strategy with community and with my peers, because for me, it's really important that, I understand the cultural significance of water to Aboriginal people. So I'm really excited to be on the ground to chat and to yarn face to face with mob and community about something that's also really important to me, to be able to look at that reciprocity.
Shani, please, what is the water strategy? What can we understand under the term?
The Aboriginal Water Strategy basically is a tool. It's an opportunity and a roadmap to improve access, water access to water for cultural and economic purposes for Aboriginal people. So from 2018 to 2023, involving more than 75 workshops during our engagement on water resource planning and regional water strategies, the team have come up with a draft Aboriginal water strategy that was co-designed with Aboriginal communities. So we're really looking to re-engage with Aboriginal communities to make sure, whether we've got this tool right, is it fit for purpose, and whether or not there needs to be any changes.
And so what were the results of these talks, if we can maybe summarize it?
We had 75 workshops with peak Aboriginal communities and community groups. And basically there was a big consensus on six overarching kind of principles and aspirations, which are really important to Aboriginal people. So the kind of the key highlights are really looking at culture, health and well-being, caring for country, meaningful engagement, economic benefit, shared culture, and environmental benefit. So really overarching principles that are really important to Aboriginal people as kind of headliners to look at how the draft Aboriginal strategy was developed.
And now the communities are invited to meetings that will start from July 23rd. What will be discussed in those meetings?
It's a great question. The team will be looking at the draft objectives and actions. So we're really looking at what is the vision for the Aboriginal Water Strategy. So we'll be taking a much deeper dive with community in more of an informal sharing, yarning circle way to really kind of test those ideas and assumptions around the draft objectives and actions. So, we will have butcher's paper, pens, post-it notes, and really being able to kind of interrogate the community's wishes on what's really important, you know, for water around them. So we really want to be able to identify those barriers and existing water management frameworks so that we can review those and look at two-way knowledge sharing for Aboriginal communities and the department. So we really want to also promote awareness of water access. So it's really important for us to kind of interrogate the ideas that we have, really look at the gaps, and then be able to kind of come back to the community and to the department with, you know, a draft strategy.
And is it still possible to join, or how can our listeners join if they're interested?
Oh, absolutely. So whilst it's a very long website, if you just Google in the New South Wales Aboriginal Water Strategy, it will come up to the homepage where you can click on the map of New South Wales. And across the icons, there are 52 locations on country where community members can register at a local venue. So, yeah, we'll be on the road.
And my last question, what are the next steps after the meetings?
So once we have worked with our consultant, we'll be consolidating all of the feedback. So we will have what we call a what you heard report. It's basically the synthesis and the outcomes of the report. Obviously, you know, we have consent in terms of that two-way learning and reciprocity with what we're gathering. And then we'll be able to finalise the draft strategy. And we're looking by the end of the year to have that signed up by the minister before releasing early in 2025.
Thank you so much, Shani, for talking to us and telling us more about the Aboriginal Water Strategy and the yarns that are going to be held in New South Wales.
Thank you.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
I hear you call my name.
And that was Until You Call My Name by Radical Sun. And with this song, we've come to the end of today's program. NITV Radio will be back with more stories and news from right across the country on Friday at the same time. Thanks for your company this Wednesday afternoon in this program that was coming to you from Nam on the Kulin Nation. I'm Bertrand Tungandami. Till next time, bye for now. Yalu.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.